select committee was also at the point of where the department had already responded to the comments received by stakeholders. So in terms of today's session, the expectation was that the department would take us through their responses in terms of stakeholder comments. Okay, members, Deputy Minister, welcome. We were waiting for you, but we were not sure. We thought when you arrive, you'll join us. But we wanted to continue with the process. You're the third department we're meeting today, so you can understand. and our apologies, because I know we gave you a certain time, 11:30, to be here, but unfortunately, some of our engagements took a lot longer than expected. As you're aware, we are a select committee on security and justice. We deal with many portfolios, so sometimes we have to meet various departments on the same day. I think for the purposes of the Deputy Minister, I think other members, there are some new members from the department as well. Perhaps we'll do a quick round of introductions. My name is Sheila Sheikh. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee on Security and Justice, and I don't have an echo when I speak, but be that as it may, on my right, honorable members, I think you can introduce yourself.
Good afternoon. My name is Anil Etohia. I'm the chief whip of this committee, and I'm representing the Northern Cape. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Deputy Minister and staff. My name is Bukiswani Uta. I'm the member of committee, and I'm from the executive.
Good afternoon, Isaac Mbulelo Sileku, Western Cape.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, GM and the official. My name is Cindy Lemoine from Mpumalanga Province.
Good day, everybody. I'm Simon Faela from KwaZulu-Natal.
I'm China Dodong from Northwest.
Thank you, honorable members, Deputy Minister and your team. Perhaps I should maybe first indicate to members that we did receive an apology from the minister who's in Zambia as we speak. China. He's in China. Okay. Okay, so, all right. What is the date today? My apologies. My apologies. It's just been a long day, and I think we did get a written response, but I think it was in relation to the previous, to another meeting that we scheduled and we changed. But the minister is out of the country, and Deputy Minister, we happy that you're here today, because I think members did raise in the previous meeting that we wanted representation of the minister or the deputy. You're aware that we are within the process of trying to resuscitate the BME poll within the NCOP. Let me hand over to you, Deputy Minister, to introduce your team.
Thank you, Chair. Let me firstly send the apology for the Minister who is in China, and also apologize for DJ who just joined us now. He was still dealing with the issue of the asylum seekers and refugees and around the issue of the UNHCR, which was an urgent matter that he had to deal with. I'm going to request the team. What we had done, Chair, is that we met with the team, and there is a summary of events that we would like to make before we get to the actual issue of the responses. I can promise you, Chair, it's going to be very quick, but firstly, I will allow the members of the team to introduce themselves. I will start from this side of the DJ.
Good morning, Mr. Afternoon, members and honorable chairperson. No, my name is Tulani Mavuso. I'm the acting director general.
Good morning, chairperson, honorable members. My name is Dion Erasmus. I'm chief director, legal services and home affairs. Good day, Chair and Honourable Members, the Civil Measure Director of Drafting Legal Services.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister. My name is Aura Africa. I head a project office that is leading the establishment of the VMA.
Thank you, Chair. What brings us here today is our commitment for the advancement of the Border Management Authority Bill.
Good afternoon, sir. Yes, I've introduced myself earlier, or my deputy minister introduced me, Brigadier van der Walt from South African Police. Sir.
Be out of order. The Deputy Minister has introduced his team. Let us continue, Deputy Minister.
No, thank you. Thank you, Chair. As I've indicated that what brings us here is our commitment for the advancement of the Border Management Authority Bill, which is a gateway towards the establishment of the Border Management Authority. And I think it's important that we explain that the Border Management Authority Bill is going to result into an establishment of a Border Management Authority public entity. This is an entity that will full organ of the state, and it will operate like you will see the South African Revenue Services. It will be a single command and control entity for the overall border law enforcement. That means it will be dealing with the 72 ports of entry in the land, in terms of airport, and in terms of maritime. It will also be responsible with the land borderline management and also maritime border enforcement area. As you will have heard, currently, in terms of border management, it is not the Department of Home Affairs that is entirely responsible for issues of border management. You will find that in the border you will have the South African National Defence Force, you will have the South African Police Services, you will have Department of Health, you will have Agriculture, you will have SARS, and other entities. And as a result now, this bill, and this which will result into this entity, is to coordinate all these functions and put them under one border management authority. Now, the journey that has been undertaken is that in 2015 in August, the Department of Home Affairs concluded its public participation process. I'm saying this so that we can take comfort that the public has been given a lot of time to input into this particular bill. The Cabinet then approved the draft bill to go to Parliament on the 23rd of September in 2015. It then went through to NEDLAC from November 2015 to May 2016, which really gave those stakeholders a lot of time to engage with the issue of the bill. The following three key issues were then raised at NEDLAC. The first one was the concern around the agentification, what they term agentification of the state, and that we are somehow also making our border management to be run by agents. We can safely say that it is not the case in this regard, because the Border Management Authority will be a public entity under the full control of the state. As well as they raise the issue of security vetting, which will continue to be done by the state security services. They were also worried around the issues of routine searches that was raised by Business Unity South Africa. But our view is that we can't say we want to have a border management authority that must conduct, you know, compliance searches, and then business says we must not do that, because that is the core of our operation. And as such, it's our view that we need to continue with it. It then went to the Portfolio Committee in August 2016, which also included another public participation phase. Parliament approved on the 8th of June 2017 for submission to the NCOP. The Select Committee then published it on the 7th of October. There were two issues that were raised by the Select Committee then that we would like to also raise with yourself and explain what our view is with regard to those issues. The first issue was around clause 4.2 of the draft bill, which talks to the issue of exclusive. If you go through, I would like to read 4.2 because I think it's important for the select committee. 4.2 reads as such: the border law enforcement functions within the border law enforcement area at and the ports of entry must be performed exclusively by the officers of the authority. Now, the insertion of that particular clause, it does not talk to law enforcement in its entirety. It refers to border law enforcement, not law enforcement in its entirety. That's the first issue that we would like to explain, which means the Border Management Authority does not take away the responsibility of the South African Police Force to exercise law enforcement in the border. It remains with the South African Police Services. And the reason for that exclusively is made to make sure that we protect the state against outsourcing of critical functions, which means there can't be a private company that must come and exercise border law enforcement. So the purpose of that particular exclusively is to make sure that it is the officers that are employed by the Border Management Authority that have been properly vetted that will have the authority to conduct border law enforcement, which means even at any point in the state when the BMA, Border Management Authority, wants to say let us subcontract security providers, they can't be able to do that. So that exclusively was introduced for that particular purpose. I think it's important that we raise that particular issue. The second issue was the request on clause 5D to specifically, before saying other organs of state. Let me firstly read 5D of the bill. It says, cooperate and coordinate its border law enforcement functions with other organs of state, border communities, and or any other person. And the request was that we must include the South African Police Service. And our view in this manner is that when we say law enforcement agencies, which means that will be your South African Police Force, that will be your South African National Defense Force, and other authorities, any work that is done there must be done with them. We do feel that singling out the South African Police Services means that we must now detail all law enforcement agencies. And as government change, if further law enforcement agencies are established, that will mean we must consistently come back and change. And our view is that by saying law enforcement agencies which are entrusted with that responsibility, it also covers the South African Police Services. And in actual sense, the responsibility of the BMA is the border law enforcement. So the police remain responsible. For instance, if a murder was to happen in the border area, it does not mean that the South African Police Service must not come there, because it's a law enforcement issue now. So we thought we should explain that for purposes of this parliament, of the select committee. Parliament has then taken a resolution as of yesterday to concur with the NCOP that the bill must be revised. And the major hurdles that have really stopped the moving forward of this bill is the issue around customs and SARS. And we have engaged with SARS and we have agreed that customs and the collection of revenue should remain the responsibility of SARS, which means SARS falling under finance has the responsibility to collect revenue and to do customs work. And as such, that is why now we are saying we are surgically removing the issue of customs outside of the Border Management Authority to continue to reside with the South African Revenue Services. And there are agreements that have been entered into. We have incorporated all issues that have been raised by the South African National Defense Force into the bill. We continue to engage with them. We have written agreements with the South African Police Services, because I'm sure that it is of concern to the committee to understand how we are working with other law enforcement agencies. Other departments have not raised issues around the bill. Today we are now here to present the consolidated report on public comments in terms of comments that we have received from the public. I can't, Chair, further emphasize, there's nothing I can say more to emphasize the importance of us being able to finalize this particular bill. Because it's not just a bill, or it's not going to just be an act. There is a lot of institutional arrangement that must be made to build capacity. This is supposed to bring to life an operational entity that will deal with our problems with regards to the border management, which have been really issues of interest in the recent times. But we believe that by having established this entity, by firstly passing an act, will really help us go a long way. Thank you very much, Chair. I will leave it to the team to go through the request that we are called here to do, which is to respond to the public comments. And I'm hoping maybe we'll try and summarize it, but the document is available for members to peruse. I'm not saying that because I'm saying you must now dodge the presentation. I'm just saying that you must, highlight very key issues, and that will be of interest and of serious substance for the committee. But I thought it is important that we firstly take you through what we seek to achieve. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. If I may interject, I don't think you should try and summarize. Please be as extensive as you possibly can. This is a critical stage of the bill development process, and I think it's important that all members of this committee get up to speed on these matters and in terms of how the department is responding to them, so that we can then take this process forward, right? Sorry for that, Deputy Minister. I just thought we should allow. We're not going anywhere today. It's a working day. We're here. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honourable Members, the document that is in front has been circulated. I trust that all is in possession of the document. These were the comments that were received by the former Select Committee on the bill that was published by the Select Committee, the BMA bill. There were 11 comments that were received, and they've been detailed there on the first page. So when you go through the comments, there are comments on 23 of the clauses, of the 41 clauses. There were comments in respect of 23 of those clauses, which was on the preamble, then also clause 1, which deals with the definitions, then clause 4, dealing with the establishment of the authority, on clause 5, the functions of the authority, clause 7, the appointment of the commissioner and deputy commissioners, clause 8, terms of office of the commissioner and deputy commissioners, clause 10, conditions of service and remuneration of commissioner and the deputy commissioners, on clause 13, which deals with the appointment of officials, then on clause 15, duties, functions and powers of officers of the border guard, clause 16, terms and conditions of employment, clause 17, which deals with the limitation of rights, and on clause 18, which deals with powers of entry, search, seizure, arrest and detention, clause 19, dealing with routine searches and seizures, clause 21, arrested or detained persons and seized goods, clause 22, with the funds of the dealing with the funds of the authority, clause 25, dealing with the border technical committee, clause 26, and the advisory committees, clause 27, the implementation protocols, then also on clause 28, the delegation by the minister, clause 29, the review or appeal of decisions, clause 30, dealing with ports, points or places of entry or exit with approval of the minister, clause 34, dealing with liability, and clause 37, which deals with the transfer of employees from organs of state to the authority. And then lastly, there were also general comments or comments that were highlighted in general. So those were the clauses on which there were comments. So if I go to page 2, that was just a summary of the clauses on which there were comments, Chairperson. On the preamble, we've got your Refugee Legal and Advocacy Centre that indicated they applauded obviously the objectives of the bill, but that they indicated they were concerned to note that the preamble makes no mention of the non-reforma principle, which is a principle in terms of the Refugees Act that you won't return people to a country where they're going. So it deals with your refugees and your asylum seekers. And then they recommended that there's a duty to recognize and uphold the non-reforma principle, and that it must be embedded in the objectives and the preamble of the bill. The response that we have in that regard is obviously that the BMA bill will be focused on border law enforcement functions that emanate from several pieces of legislation, which, amongst others, will include your Immigration Act as well as your Refugees Act. And both of them adequately deal with issues of asylum seekers who declare their intention to seek asylum in South Africa. So in view thereof, there's no need to make specific reference to the non-reforma principle in this specific piece of legislation. If there's a person that declares his or her intention to seek asylum in the Republic, that person will be dealt with in terms of Section 23 of the Immigration Act, which deals with your asylum transit visa, and then further in terms of Section 22 of the Refugees Act, which deals with adjudication, etc. It's your, what they call your asylum seeker visa that's then given to such an individual. If we look at Clause 1 of the bill, Chairperson, it relates to the definitions, and there the Refugee Legal and Advocacy Center indicated once again that the words asylum seekers and refugees, they're not included in the definition section. And it comes back to what I indicated just now, that obviously there are other pieces of legislation dealing with this, which is your Refugees Act and your Immigration Act, and we must remember that the BMA legislation will cater for a basket of other pieces of legislation as well. So it doesn't deal with policy issues, but it is an implementation piece of legislation. So it's framework legislation, as Mr. Elwood indicates. Then on the Institute for Security Studies, also still on the definition clause, they referred to the definition of border law enforcement area, and they were seeking clarity to say what is required on the actual extent of the border law enforcement area and how is the 10 kilometers going to be determined and established. This is something, the 10 kilometer reasonable distance, it's not a new concept. On the statute book, if you look at SAPS and in the defense legislation, they've currently got this. So we also took it from other pieces of legislation so that there's alignment between pieces of legislation on the statute book. And obviously the reasonable distance is determined according to the circumstances, such as example of hot pursuit, how far do you go, etc. And it might even be beyond the 10 kilometers. If it's 10.5 kilometers, it doesn't mean in that specific instance you can't do it, because that will still be within a reasonable distance. Chair, on clauses 2 and 3, there was no comments. Clause 4 of the bill, dealing with the establishment of the authority, BUSA in this regard indicated that they referred to the engagements that we had at NEDLAC, and they also said that there must be they consistently opposed the establishment of a new agency or the authority. Now, our view in this regard is that the establishment of the BMA is a priority to address multiple challenges being experienced in the management of the country, our country's borders. So government spent nearly 6 months deliberating on the BMA bill in the NEDLAC process. It was from November, 2015 to May 2016 that we were before NEDLAC on this issue. It should also be noted that obviously there were four separate bilaterals that we held with BUSA in this regard as well, and the NEDLAC report on the bill, there were only three issues that were raised as areas of disagreement, which was indicated by the Deputy Minister just a few minutes ago. On the socioeconomic impact assessment, there were also issues raised there by BUSA, and they also indicated that the DHA has not provided information on the funding that is required for the establishment of the BMA. In this regard, the response is that in 2015, GTAC, which is the Government Technical Advisory Center in National Treasury, had undertaken a detailed study of the public expenditure in the border environment, and the estimates at that point in time was that the control expenditure were put to about 3.8 billion rand. Then in 2016-17 financial year, Home Affairs undertook additional work on the costs as far as it relates to the establishment of the BMA, and the projections that we had there, the latest projections, indicate that the BMA will require approximately 10.5 billion rand in the year 2032 and beyond to perform the mandate. So this is obviously an ongoing process. It's also indicated there from Woosa's side that the key challenges that the bill purports to resolve all relate to the movement of people rather than the movement of goods, and that they acknowledge that there are serious challenges relating to the illicit movement of goods, measures to combat illicit trade, and that it should not be at expense and efforts to facilitate legitimate trade. Obviously, we said that the BMA bill gives effect to a basket of border law enforcement functions covering the movement of persons and goods. So by improving and streamlining the management of the border law enforcement, the BMA will obviously directly support trade facilitation. A key problem that we found in the border management is the current fragmentation that applies in various border law enforcement functions, and this has contributed obviously to a myriad of problems, including corruption, non-aligned operations by individual organs of state, different standards of operating and standard operating procedures, different conditions of service, etc., at the ports of entry and our borders that we have. Woosa also raised or said that they have a view that the functions relating to the movement of goods and people should be kept separate, and that functions relating to the movement of goods should not be assumed by the proposed BMA. Now, as the Deputy Minister has indicated just now, one of the issues, and there has been agreement with SARS in this regard and with National Treasury, is that there will be a carve-out clause where obviously issues relating to goods, and so as far as SARS is concerned, in other words, revenue collection, etc., will be dealt with by them. But it does not mean, for instance, that, I don't want to take a far-reached example, but if somebody passes away abroad, and that person has to be brought to South Africa, obviously the BMA will have a role to play in that regard, but it doesn't relate to a SARS issue. So goods is still within the realm of BMA as far as that is concerned. Chair, then as far as the... we also indicated there that the current coordination approach has failed to secure the country's borders, and also we've got these silo activities and departments that have contributed to the problems that we have in the border environment at this point in time, hence the need for this one command and control structure. The Public Service Commission, Chair, on the same clause, indicated that trade unions' position is that the BMA should be located within the public service. Our indication in this regard is that we've made a number of compromises during the NEDLAC process to address the concern that was raised by Labour. And one of the key concessions that was included in that provision that requires the BMA to undertake collective bargaining within the public service bargaining coordinating chamber. So this addressed the issue that was raised at NEDLAC, the issue that Labour had, and that the BMA would be diluting organised bargaining power of Labour. So that issue has been addressed at the NEDLAC process. Chair, the BMA will also not outsource government functions. Hence, the Deputy Minister has raised just now the inclusion of the word exclusively, because the issue that was raised is that you're going to outsource government functions to other entities, and that's precisely the reason for having included the word exclusively in the said clause that was raised there. And remember, this bill will be fully governed by the Public Finance Management Act, PFMA. So it's not outside, it's still within government in that sense. Lawyers for Human Rights indicated there was no costing attached to the bill, but obviously we've indicated, if we go back to page 4 of this document, we set out what was done by GTAC, etc., so the same issues arise there. They also indicate that the White Paper on International Migration suggests that the establishment of detention centres along the border to house asylum seekers pending the adjudication process of their claims. What we're indicating in this, obviously that's a separate process. The White Paper on International Migration is a policy document which will be run by the Department of Home Affairs itself. So it doesn't impact on the BMA itself in that sense, and it will be run by Home Affairs. And once again, once the amendments come in terms of the Immigration Act, Refugees Act, based on that specific policy, if there are needs for amendments that need to be made to the, one will do that to the BMA. But currently, as we see it, there's no such, it doesn't have an impact on the BMA at all at this point in time. Chair, as far as Nehao is concerned, they indicated in all their engagements with government they have made it very clear that they are opposed to the hollowing out of state capacity through the creation of unaccountable agencies and the outsourcing of government functions. This is the issue that Deputy Minister spoke about, the agentification of the BMA and government departments, and we've already indicated there that the BMA will be a state entity under the Public Finance Management Act, and obviously there will be no hollowing out of state capacity, and it ties up with the issue of the word exclusively, the functions that needs to be performed so that it's not outsourced. There was also a detailed BMA business case that was undertaken that assessed the advantages and the disadvantages of various state institutional forms. So there was proper research done in this regard as to what kind of entity this should be, etc., etc. And there are details there on page 7 going over to page 8. Chair, they also indicate that there's absolutely no reason why the integrated and coordinated management of the ports of entry and the enforcement of border law cannot be established within the public service. And here we've said that the coordinated border management has failed since 1994 to effectively secure the country's borders. This is the situation that we're sitting with now, hence the need for this. So we need, the central problem is the lack of single command and control structure within the border environment. And this is precisely what the BMA bill is trying to rectify. We can furthermore indicate here that Cabinet decided to establish the BMA based on an integrated border management approach, and obviously government has demonstrated overwhelmingly goodwill in the NEDLAC process. We were there for 6 months, and we made a number of concessions in respect of COSATU that they also noted and they appreciated, as well as, and now obviously is an affiliate, so they're aware of it. Chair, COSATU on this specific clause indicated the remaining concerns or areas of concern are the location of the BMA and the call to ban all outsourcing. We've already discussed that, so I'm not going to deliberate on that any further. We've already dealt with that specific issue. What we're trying to do in terms of the BMA bill, it will be fully accountable. It's a state entity accountable to Parliament via the Minister of Home Affairs. Secondly, the bill also makes provision that collective bargaining of the BMA will take place in the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council. And thirdly, Clause 4.2 states that the border law and functions will be performed exclusively, once again we come back to that word, hence the importance of that word, by officers of the BMA. Chair COSATU also indicated that all these issues, once again, could be dealt with in the public service. We've already dealt with that, so I'm not going to dwell on that anymore. The BMA would be the only state security organ located outside the public service, they indicate. And our response to that is that COSATU's concern of the BMA potentially fragmenting the state and the power of labor in collective bargaining was addressed through the following clauses welcomed by COSATU in the NEDLAC process. One, the provision that the border law enforcement functions will be an exclusive BMA function. And obviously two, the insertion of the PSCBC clause. In other words, that there will be collective bargaining, which is something that we brought into the BMA bill. Chair, the Institute for Security Studies on this specific clause, they raised the issue of the securitization of the border zones. And they did indicate that they recognize and appreciate the need for effective border management and law enforcement that is civilian-led, but they needed clarity on the form and the function of the authority, what is meant and understood by the BMA being part of armed services, as stated in section, or actually clause 4.1 of the bill. Now, if you go to section 1993 of the Constitution, that specific clause permits the establishment of armed organizations or services in terms of national legislation, other than your other security services, i.e. SAPs, etc. So section 1993 authorizes or allows us to do that, but you must do it obviously in terms of legislation, which is being done now in terms of the BMA bill. And it will only be your border guard that will be the armed side of the border management authority as part of the officers. Your border guard as part of the officers will be the armed force, but not your, like for instance, your administrative personnel, etc., won't form part of that specific security arm. Then they mentioned section 4, but it's actually Clause 4.2, they say restrict border law enforcement functions exclusively to the BMA. It's the whole issue of the word exclusively, as was expressed by the Deputy Minister just now. They wanted to know what the regulatory mechanisms will be in place to prevent other law enforcement to perform functions within their mandate that could be interpreted as border law enforcement functions. We've indicated as Deputy Minister, if there is a function that needs to be performed by SAFE within the border law enforcement areas, that will be done. Nobody's being stopped to do that. What you do have in the bill as well, if one looks at Clause 27, there's specific reference to what we call implementation protocols, and it makes it very clear that these protocols need to be entered into between organs of state where cooperation would be needed, it's obligatory in nature. It's not open for interpretation. It must be done if there needs to be cooperation on certain matters. So if you look at clauses 3B and 5D of the bill, it makes provision for coordination and cooperation with other organs of state. Chair, if you look at clause 5 of the bill, the functions of the authority, BUSA, they indicated that, once again, we come to the issue movement of people versus the movement of goods and the customs functions. We've already dealt with that, and we, of course, of the carve-out clause that we have in agreement with National Treasury and SARS, this will be dealt with, but there will still be other goods and stuff that we're still looking to as the BMA, as I explained a bit earlier. The absorption of functions, BUSA indicated that the Home Affairs has underestimated the logistical, financial and legal difficulties inherent in absorbing the various law enforcement related functions into the BMA. So in other words, there are other pieces of legislation that would impact this basket list that we'll have to draw in under the BMA. Now what we've done is we've taken extensive legal advice in this regard on how to go about transferring all these legal mandates to the Border Management Agency. The Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, they've supported the view in this regard that a presidential proclamation in terms of Section 97 of the Constitution is the most appropriate legal mechanism to transfer functions to the BMA. So what will happen is there will be a proclamation that will be signed by the President sending all these different functions in terms of other pieces of legislation and to be performed under the BMA legislation. Chair, then, the Institute for Security Studies indicated while the bill speaks of the role of the BMA in facilitating revenue collection, a point that Treasury and South African Revenue Services have repeatedly raised before the Parliamentary Committee as a concern, it remains unclear to them as to how this is going to work. It comes back to the whole issue, the agreement that has now been reached with National Treasury and SARS in this regard, so that will be dealt with in there. Then there's nothing on Clause 6. On Clause 7, Chairperson, the appointment of Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner, there the MEC for Economic Opportunities of the Western Cape Government indicated that they refer there to Clause 7.2b, which is actually incorrect. There is no Clause 7.2b that deals with a specific issue. There is only 7.1, 7.2, so there's no 7.2b. But having said that, we indicate that there are clear mechanisms in the bill to deal with the issue of acting capacity, because they say, how's the acting commissioner going to be appointed, etc., etc. If you look at the bill and you look at the commissioner section and appointments that are done by the president, etc., all of those are set out clearly in the bill. The Institute for Security Studies, on the same clause, Chairperson, honourable members, they indicated that the institutional positioning of authority, relating to the institutional positioning of authority and the need for effective oversight and accountability, the issues of lines of reporting, the view is that the bill is not clear that the Commissioner and Deputy Commissioners effectively report to the Minister of Home Affairs. And however, given that these will be commissioned officers, it is imperative that clarity is provided on how their roles will relate to their service in SAPS. Now, this is a misunderstanding. There is no link between Home Affairs, of the Commissioner of the BMA, on the one hand, and the SAPS Commissioner. It's not the same issue, so it was just misunderstood. They're separate entities, and obviously we'll deal with that in the separate ways. Chair, on the UNHCR on page 15 indicated that the BMA bill provides, obviously, for the appointment also of Commissioner and the Chief Executive Officer of the Accounting Authority for the BMA. They have the view that an independent institution, such as the South African Human Rights Commission, would be well placed to serve in this function and to play a supportive role to the BMA commissioners monitoring and evaluating progress of the BMA. the view held in this regard with the response is obviously that the BMA is subject to the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. The Human Rights Commission is a Chapter 9 institution, and it has a constitutional mandate to obviously over all organs of state in relation to the protection of human rights. So there's no necessity to explicitly explain this or specify this in the bill. It is there already in terms of the Constitution, and the BMA bill is subject to the Constitution. If we turn to Clause 8, Chairperson, which deals with the terms of office, the Commissioner and Deputy Commissioners as well. Once again, the Western Cape Government indicated that Clause 2(8) must ensure that the subsequent period referred to in this clause, that it must end before the agreed terms expires, so as to ensure seamless succession and facilitate proper planning. This is an operational issue that we indicated there, and that obviously will be dealt with once the BMA is established, because once it comes to acting appointments, etc., there are processes and procedures in place to deal with that. Clause 9, there were no comments, Chair. Clause 10 deals with the conditions of service and remuneration of the Commissioner and the Deputy Commissioners. Once again, here, the Western Cape Government raised issue with Clause 10.1, which is actually incorrect. If you look at what is being said here, it should actually refer to Clause 10.2, or it's in relation to Clause 10.2 of the bill. They indicated the clause requires that the President must, after consultation with the Minister and the Minister of Finance, determine the remuneration, allowances and other benefits of the Commissioner. Obviously, we're saying there that the President is empowered to appoint the Commissioner as well as the Deputy Commissioners, and therefore, obviously, the determination of remuneration, allowances and other benefits of the Commissioner is a presidential prerogative. So, if we look at the Public Service Commission, Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council also made comments on Clause 10 of the bill, which they indicated it compromises collective bargaining. We've already dealt with this. We indicated that we made compromises in this regard. We can see that on page 5 of this presentation, Chair. Clause 11, there were no comments, and neither on Clause 12 of the bill. If we look at Clause 13, which deals with the appointment of officials, this is obviously now officials of the BMA. The Refugee Legal and Advocacy Centre in this regard indicated that they're concerned with the fact that the Clause 13 makes it mandatory for an official to undergo security clearance process only. And they were of the opinion that it is also essential for all prospective employees to undergo an assessment on refugee law and international law, which deals with training and stuff like that. So what we're indicating to specify these specific areas of training, it's an operational matter. You don't specify things like that in a bill. So obviously the Border Guard officers will also need to go under training on a range of other areas as well, not only this. So obviously there will be regulations that need to be drafted in terms of this bill, and this is where it will be then indicated what training will be undergone, etc. Once again, we come back to say that this bill was crafted as framework legislation, and it was consciously decided that operational matters would not be provided for in the specific legislation itself. Clause 14, there were no comments, Chair. On Clause 15, which deals with the duties, functions and powers of the officers of the Border Guard. Once again, the Refugee Legal and Advocacy Centre in this regard indicated that they are pleased with the fact that the section mentions rights and interests of vulnerable groups, including refugees and asylum seekers. They, however, went on to recommend that the section also makes mention of one essential right, which is enshrined in Section 21(4) of the Refugees Act, and that any person who has expressed an interest to apply for asylum ought to be allowed to do so. We've noted the comment, but obviously, as I indicated on page 2 earlier, there are specific pieces of legislation dealing with refugees and asylum seekers, which is your Refugees Act, and it's catered for in terms of that piece of legislation, Chair. On page 19, Chair, LHR indicated that they are satisfied to see that the provision under Section 15.3 of the bill, which should actually be clause 15.3 of the bill, which specifically requires officers to exercise his or her powers in a manner that takes due regard of fundamental rights. They're happy that so obviously it's aligned to the Constitution. They do, however, recommend the inclusion of a specific provision relating to the training of all BMA officers with regard to fundamental human rights, including the right to seek asylum under both the South African and international law. We've just addressed that as well. If you can see on page 17, we did say that training obviously is an operational issue, which we dealt with in terms of the regulations. The UNHCR chair on the same clause indicated that the draft BMA bill at present, or under the bill, the functions and tasks of the BMA, they do not explicitly include the protection of fundamental rights, including the right of asylum. Once again, we've already addressed this, but it was concerns that was raised to them. The Refugees Act is there to deal with that. The Institute for Security Studies on the specific clause requested clarity on what the position of BMA officers would be in relation to the law enforcement of, amongst others, the Immigration Act and the Refugees Act, etc. And this is what we indicated, that the powers and the functions related to the Immigration Act as well as the Refugees Act will be delegated to the BMA. In other words, those powers and functions that need to be performed by BMA officers within the border law enforcement area would be those that will be taken care of in terms of the Section 97 proclamation that would be transferred to the BMA. In terms of Clause 16 of the bill, which deals with terms and conditions of employment, the PSCBC in this regard referred to Clause 16B in Chapter 5 of the bill. However, that is Clause 16.1b. It's an incorrect reference to say Clause 16b, and it's mentioned on page 10 of the bill, which relates to officers employed subject to the terms and conditions of employment, and that must be done in accordance with any collective agreement concluded by the Public Service Coordinated Bargaining Council. We've already highlighted this. This also formed part of the NEDLAC process, and it was one of the key concessions that were made by government regarding the inclusion of this provision that requires that the BMA must undertake collective bargaining within the ESCB. So that has been taken care of in the specific bill. Clause 17 of the bill, Chair, deals with the limitation of rights. In this regard, BUSA had indicated that they're concerned about the implications of both, what they say, section, but it's clauses 17A and 17C, which deals with the search and seizure and screening of officials of the BMA. It's not the public at large. So what we're saying here is, if you read what they've indicated here, we indicated the concerns of BUSA obviously were dealt with during the NEDLAC processes, as well as during the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs deliberations on the bill. Now, in the bill, the focus is on officials of the BMA, not the general public. So if you can read the specific clause, the example that they provided relates to members of the public at large, which is not the intention of the clause of this bill. This deals with specific limitation of rights insofar as BMA officials are concerned, not public at large. So those grounds of limitation, we believe that they are justified. Chair, if you go to page 22 on clause 18, which deals with powers of entry, search, seizure, arrest and detention, the Refugee Legal and Advocacy Center in this regard indicate that they note the provisions of this entire, and they are in agreement with the bulk of those provisions. But they were concerned the fact that the section empowers an official to arrest and detain a person on certain grounds, but it does not oblige the officer to promptly inform the arrested persons of his or her rights in terms of Section 35 of the Constitution. Now, if one goes and read that, specific clause, the BMA obviously is subject to the Constitution as the supreme law of the country, and therefore we confirm to the provisions of Section 35 of the Constitution and the relevant law. So obviously any piece of legislation is subject to the Constitution, and you have to implement and apply it accordingly. Chair, the Institute for Security Studies also on this specific clause, 18, indicated that the power of entry, search, seizure and arrest of detention is important, and that it's also important to make that it is made clear that this relates to commissioning of offences, not a broad interpretation of the scope of arrest that goes beyond offences under South African law. And our response in this regard, obviously, is that arrests are always for a specific offence. It cannot be for anything else. So you can't say just for anything. It must be in relation to a specific offence that you are being arrested for having committed this crime. Once again, the Institute for Security Studies under Clause 18.1, on the issue where we say, or without a warrant, they of the view that the words, or without a warrant, should be removed, as Section 18.2 of the bill already provides for instances in which an officer may perform functions without a warrant. Obviously, we disagree, and the reason why we're saying this is because Clause 18.2
is set there to provide guidelines or circumstances in terms of which an officer may perform certain functions without a warrant. Either it sets it out when you can do what, A, B, C, D. So that is the reason why it is specifically mentioned there. Clause 19, Chair, which deals with routine searches and seizures.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt. Deputy Minister, I understand that you want to go to the House, to the National Assembly, right? It's fine. We will continue with the process. However, I think from before you go, and my apologies for this interruption, but I think before the Deputy Minister goes, maybe we need just maybe clarity on something, Deputy Minister. I think in terms of your presentation, because I think one of the issues in terms of the last committee on social security, I mean, you have tried to clarify some of the issues, but it's safe to say that a lot of the issues arose from the different departments, whether it was police, whether it was SANDF, whether it was Treasury for that matter. But given the background that the issue with Treasury has been resolved to a large extent, I think us as a committee, we're taking this process from where the previous committee left it. And the bone of contention was around these four departments, not necessarily, or the impression created was that there was not that agreement in terms of the bill itself, because there were always issues being raised by different departments, and we still have a responsibility as a committee to ensure that the Departments of Defense, Police, at this point, are also on the same page as the Department of Home Affairs as far as this bill is concerned. I'm not sure, because in your briefing, I know, and previously the DG did also indicate to us that with SAPS you do have an agreement, and we just say that we'd also like to see that agreement. But just from your side, Deputy Minister, are you saying that all of these issues with the various departments, as far as Department of Home Affairs is concerned, all these matters have been resolved? Even the issue of the exclusive was not just a select committee issue. It came out from engagements with SAPS. So, over to you, Deputy Minister. And I think after your response, we'll allow you to leave and then continue with the process.
No, thank you, Chair. I must again apologize myself. Unfortunately, it's a three-line whip, so were all expected to be there in the sitting, and that is why we have to apologize. But I think the committee can rest assured we've got the DG will remain, and also the colleagues who have been technically dealing with the matter will also remain. As we have indicated, Chair, that on the issue of the SAPS, we do have a written agreement. I would request colleagues to share that agreement, and I made sure before we came here that we actually have sight of it, so that we can be able to give it. With regard to the South African National Defence Force, we have had interactions with them, and what has resulted is that all the issues they had raised, we made sure that they are incorporated as part. So the other critical stakeholder then became the finance department to deal with the issue of SAS. And I think we have been very explicit in terms of how we have dealt with the issue of SARS to make sure that the Department of Finance is actually covered. Because the main point of contention when I had an interaction with the Deputy Minister of Finance was, where have you seen in the country where finance relinquishes its responsibility to collect revenue to another institution? And we immediately agreed that no, probably you are very much correct. Collection of revenue remains with finance, and that is why we have actually then said we are dealing it in a manner that we are surgically removing that scope of revenue collection in terms of customs to the responsibility of SARS. So that is how we have dealt with the issues. But I think even moving forward, there is a technical committee of all these departments that obviously even after inputs have been made, they will always go back to that technical committee, fix whatever needs to be fixed in a very collaborative manner. Even after this, whatever happens or whatever changes are suggested and that must be made, they will obviously make sure that we go back to them at the technical level. Our team sits with them and then we make sure that we work as a unitary government. Thank you.
Deputy Minister, before you leave, I think it's an issue that came out of engagement with the FANDF. While it's not their responsibility, but they did raise issues around private airstrips. And I know this falls under the South African Civil Aviation Authority, but I'm just saying this is perhaps one flag that you need to take back with you and see how you address this matter.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know how I missed it. I think the team did brief me around that particular issue. The issue of the private airstrips in the main is dealt with by the Department of Transport. And I think it would advise that maybe the Department of Transport can come through to explain their role. But in terms of border line, in terms of border management, our responsibility is with regard to designated ports of entries. That means you will find them in OR Tambo and in certain areas. Now, if there is to be another designated point of entry, it needs to be designated according to legislation. And those private airstrips, they are not actually, some of them, ports of entry, which means we are not supposed to be having an external person landing there and not being cleared. In the main, it's about locality, people who are already here within the country. And their operations are sort of more of a Department of Transport kind of responsibility. Where we normally come in, we were having a discussion just this morning with the DG around the issue of the fire plane, where you will have some sort of people who will move in a port of entry, but in another channel, which is determined by AXA, obviously, because they do the infrastructure outlay in terms of the airports, where we will then be requested to say there is a flight coming in on this date, therefore Home Affairs will now go in and clear people. For instance, if we're saying there is a plane landing at a certain point somewhere, but that place must firstly be designated as a point of entry, we then are able to go there. But in terms of the private airstrips, they are in the main a responsibility of the Department of Transport.
No, thank you, Deputy Minister. I think we'll release you so that you're able to make it in time. But also to let you know that as part of our oversight week, we were in Limpopo and we were at the Bay Bridge border. So we have also some kind of hands-on understanding in terms of what is going on there. But thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Okay, Advocate Erasmus, you may continue.
Thanks, Chairperson. We're halfway. I'll try. Okay, Chair. Aspect in Clause 19, which deals with your routine searches and seizures, where BUSA indicated that they disagree with, obviously, Clause 19, and they propose that the same test must be applied as in Clause 18 in relation to routine searches. As the Deputy Minister has already indicated, it's very imperative for us to be able to do these routine searches. We indicated that they will include into roadblocks within the border law enforcement area, and that the mandate to perform these routine searches is fundamental to the BMA's mandate. They're also currently being conducted at ports of entry and are yielding positive results. For example, at OR Tambo International Airport, there are these routine searches and they do yield positive results. Chair, then we can go to page 26. Clause 20, there's no comment, but then to clause 21, which deals with your arrested or detained persons and seized goods. There the RLAC once again indicated that in terms of clause 21.1, they recommend that in the event of an arrested person being an asylum seeker who has indicated an intention to apply for asylum,
the officials must also transport that specific person to the nearest refugee reception office, excuse me, just as they would transport the arrested person to a police station. Obviously, we're saying that the assistance to asylum seekers will be done in line with the Refugees Act. So there's refugee legislation that already deals with this, and it will be done in terms of that. Your Institute for Security Studies, also, they refer to Section 22.1, which is actually Clause 22.1, although but there is no Clause 22.1 in the bill. It's incorrect. But we can note there, based on the comments that they made, that the clause obviously is subject to Section 35 of the Constitution. And we always apply it in that sense or manner. Institute for Security Studies also referred to subsection 21.1, clause 21.1, where to avoid the possibility of an abuse in respect of places of detention, arrested people should only be detained at stations under the control of SAPS. So they want us to delete the words, or if a warrant expressly stipulates another place, we must bring that person to that place. They say that that should be removed because it's not clear. And we're saying that a warrant in this regard, obviously a warrant of arrest is issued at the discretion, obviously, of the presiding officer. So there is a process involved in that regard, and we can't decide to say, if it says it another because it's more conducive to do it that way, then it must be done, and one has to give effect to that warrant. Yeah. The LHR in this regard noted with concern that the detention provisions, or the detention provisions under, which should be not section, the clause 21, because it's still the bill, they looked at the current wording and it said it would only require that an officer bring an arrested or detained person to police station or other place named in a warrant as soon as it is reasonably possible. So they say there is a reference to section 35, but the wording in the section is extremely vague according to them, and it does not make a connection with either the Immigration Act or the Criminal Procedures Act. So obviously we've noted this, but the BMA bill is obviously, as I indicated earlier, subject, and it's bound by the provisions of the Constitution, as well as other relevant jurisprudence that's out there, court judgments, etc. And I'm saying that in addition to what we've already mentioned above in terms of Clause 18, Chairperson. If we look at Clause 22, which is the next one, which deals with the funds of the authority, the Western Cape government in this regard indicated that there's no obligation that's placed on an officer who seizes goods to provide the person from whom the goods are seized with a receipt for the goods as proof that the goods were seized, when they were seized, etc. It's like your SAP 13 in terms of which you book certain things in. We've looked at this, but the submission obviously relates to operational requirements, and the relevant legislation, such as the Customs and the Excise Act, will guide the issuance of a receipt in this regard. It would not fall within the BMA legislation. Clauses 23 and 24, there were no comments on that. With regard to Clause 25, Chair, Border Technical Committee, Western Cape Government requested clarity in this regard, so whether the envisaged Border Technical Committee will include the heads of provincial departments of economic development. Now, we're indicating that the Border Technical Committee is envisaged to comprise of accounting officers, obviously DGs of relevant national organs of state, but then we can also say if there is a need and a relevant provincial or municipal accounting officer is needed to, they may be required or requested to come and attend these meetings. So it's not that you exclude them, but if the need arises, they can be called to that meeting to come and account, give information, etc. Chair, if we look at Clause 26, dealing with advisory committees, the Western Cape government in this regard requested clarity whether the envisaged border technical will include the heads. It's the same as the previous comment, and they also spoke about how will the remuneration of the members of the advisory committees be determined? Clarity, obviously we indicated earlier that the minister will determine how members of advisory committee obviously will be remunerated. Clause 27 deals with the implementation protocols that I referred to earlier when I started with the presentation. In this regard, BUSA indicated that they're concerned that other organs of state may continue to undertake duplicate inspections once cargo has been moved from the border law enforcement area, thereby hampering legitimate trade. Our view in this regard is that the BMA will be responsible for all the functions within the border law enforcement area. Outside of the border law enforcement area, obviously that outside the 10-kilometer radius, as was mentioned earlier, the BMA will not have any mandate, as this will then fall within the relevant functional jurisdiction of the relevant organ of state, i.e. SAPS, whatever the case may be, if they want to search and seize certain goods in that on that specific consignment. The Western Cape government indicated here they wanted to know how will the remuneration of the members of the advisor, we've already dealt with that. And they also referred to Section 35 of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. We indicated that Clause 28 does not deal with implementation protocols. If you look at them, if you go on page 30, they talk about Clause 28.1b, etc. But 28 does not deal with implementation protocols. Clause 27 deals with implementation protocols. But what we're saying, the delegation by the minister, it deals with delegation by the minister, Clause 28. Then on clause on page 30, Chair, at the bottom there, they indicate it's not clear what the rationale is for clause 28.1, which should actually be clause 27.1, when the executive authority of each of the affected departments requested in the interministerial consultative committee, etc. And we're saying that that interministerial consultative committee, it's a policy consultative forum of ministers, whereas the implementation protocol that will be in terms of section clause 27 is a formal agreement between accounting officers of different organs of state giving effect to the execution of functions that need to perform or policies that have been made. Chair, on clause 28, which deals with the delegation by minister, the Western Cape government refers to section 35 of the International or Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. They also say that the implementation of protocols may be entered into between organs of state in different governments. So they're basically setting out here what Section 35 of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act states. Then they're saying that the Clause 28.1b empowers the authority located at a national government level to enter into protocols with principal organs of state also located at national government level. And I think the issue that arises is what about other government levels? We're saying that the provision for the implementation protocols will enable the BMA to enter into an agreement with any organ of state in any sphere of government, insofar as it is permitted by the bill and the mandates of any other organ of state. So obviously, and if you look at the implementation protocol, where there is a need to collaborate or cooperate with other organs of state, you can enter into that implementation. And in actual fact, it's obligatory. It says you must enter into an implementation protocol. But once again, I'll just go back to say that section clause 28 does not deal with implementation protocols. That's clause 27. Chair, on clause 29, which deals with review or appeal of decisions, the RLAC, they indicated that they welcome the provision of the section, but they thought that the section is missing a crucial element, which is one of the cornerstones of what they call administrative law. So, in other words, it's giving reasons, etc., and a review and appeal. What they say is that, what they're saying is that there must be different is when you review, when you appeal, when you do this, and how should it happen. What we're saying is that BMA obviously will be bound by your Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. Now, the promotion, which is a constitutionally mandated piece of legislation, obviously that section, or that indicates that you have to have internal remedies in the bill that must first be exhausted before you can go, for instance, for judicial review of a specific process or a decision, whatever the case may be. So it's constitutionally mandated, and we are complying with it. We're going to look at the section. It says out there will be a review appeal to the commissioner, then to the, if you're not happy there, it will go to the minister. If you're not happy there, obviously there can be judicial review. So we have complied fully in that regard. BUSA raises the same issue on there, where it indicates that written reasons need to be given for the decisions. It's the same issue that I've indicated to you, Chair, now. It makes it very clear, obviously, that there are how it works. So there will be a review appeal to the commissioner, then to the minister, etc. If you go on clause or page 34, Chair, then in the middle it says, business proposes that the section on appeals be amended to include an independent appeal body. Comes back to what I've just indicated now. You've got your review, and there are internal processes in terms of your budget that have been set out in clause 29. It may be reviewed or appealed to the commission, etc. It's the same response. Chair, from here we can go, because this, all of this information that's been indicated here deals with the same issue. We can go to page 38 from here, which deals with where the Western Cape government also requested clarity on clause 29. So why the provision is made for two levels of appeal. And we're just saying that it's internal. It's to the commissioner. If you're not happy with the commissioner's outcome, you then go to the minister. If you're not happy with the minister's outcome, you always have the right to judicial review in terms of the promotion. And it's aligning it with the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. Clause 30, Chair, ports, points, or places of entry or exit with approval of the minister. The Western Cape government also requested clarity. Once again, why there are two levels of appeal, it's the same answers I gave just now. There were no comments in terms of clauses 31, 32, or 33 of the bill. In terms of clause 34, which deals with liability, the Western Cape government also requested clarity on what is or who is meant by authorised official. Now, obviously, an authorised official would relate to the official of the BMA that has so been authorised to use the vehicle. Now, it's practical stuff that you'll have a trip authorization and stuff, so that will be the authorized official mentioned in that specific trip authorization. If you look at clauses 35 and 36, no comments that were received in this regard. Clause 37, which deals with the transfer of employees from organs of state to the authority, the Public Service Coordinate Bargaining Council here said that the bill's not clear under which legislation employees will be transferred. We've discussed this. This will be the proclamation that we have. It will also be, and there will be a bargaining in the bargaining council as it was put in the legislation as well, the bill, after discussions at the NEDLAC process. Clauses 38, 39, and 40, as well as 41, there were no comments that we received, Chairperson. Then, what we have, the last part is comments in general. Some of them I've already dealt with, but I just maybe erase a few of them, where Alfred Maklala, for instance, indicated that the bill must include the regulation of movements of asylum seekers and any other foreign national within the borders of our country, so that currently the foreign nationals' movements are not monitored or regulated, and that is why they are able to smuggle drugs. And so there's an issue that's being raised by the individual. We note this comment, but we're saying there are other pieces of legislation that also deals with this, but the BMA, in conjunction with the other relevant law enforcement agencies, will deal with these issues as and when they arise. There was also an issue raised by the Public Service Coordinate Bargaining Council, where Labour shares government's concerns on the state of the border, so they agree with that, the customs and migration management, but they remain opposed to the locating the BMA outside the public service. So it's something that we've already dealt with. This was on pages 5 and 6 of this presentation, Chairperson. LHR, Lawyers for Human Rights, they raised those three issues, which they indicate they say they're missing from the bill in its current form. The first issue is the detention provisions, which do not appear to be in line with the Constitutional Court's judgment, ensuring a rights-based approach to immigration and refugee protection, and then oversight and accountability issues. So what we're saying with regard to items 1 and 2, they're outside the scope of the BMA, and they will be dealt with under the Immigration Act, the Refugees Act, etc. With regard to oversight and accountability issues, they dealt with extensively within the bill. They have been built in, Chairperson. It's also indicated that the bill should clearly outline the interaction between various pieces of legislation. This is precisely the reason why you would have the Section 97 Presidential Proclamation that would obviously draw together all those pieces of legislation that need to interact in order to give effect to those pieces of legislation by the BMA officers within the border law enforcement area. The bill also then fails, they say, to mention its relationship to the Refugees Act. We've already dealt with it. It will be a basket of it. So whatever's under the Refugees Act that needs to be brought within the board will be done in terms of the Section 97 proclamation. The recommendations that's contained within the White Paper on International Migration, obviously those will be given effect to, Chairperson, during the review of the Immigration Act, the Refugees Act, and other pieces of legislation that we have. This bill cannot obviously deal with these specific matters because it falls outside of its functional scope. And this response was done in response to the LHR's concern that, of the possible implications of the department's white paper on international migration, etc. Oversight and accountability. LHR also said that they noted concern the lack of independent oversight and accountability mechanisms within the BMA. We indicated that the BMA bill provides sufficient oversight mechanisms. You've got the Interministerial Consultative Committee, you've got the Border Technical Committee, etc. So there are a lot of layers in the bill that would really deal with your oversight and accountability. Chair, from there we can go to page 44. where LHR, they indicate in their conclusions there that they support the creation of a coordinate border management system, but they note that the legislation is at times vague where it comes to most fundamental rights that we have. Now, obviously, we know that this bill, or the Act, once it becomes enacted, will obviously be subject to the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. And this bill is also informed by integrated border management approach, and the government has reviewed that the coordinated border management model that we've had in place over the last, has failed dismally over the last 20 years, hence the need for this coordinated approach. They also indicate that the legislature should not be seen to process the processing of goods and the collection of duties and taxes at the border in the same light as processing of goods. We've discussed that issue about SARS, the carving out clause that we're going to deal with. The UNHCR also refers to the white paper and the recommendation things. We've dealt with that already, Chair, we've indicated. The UNHCR also speaks to the issue of non-reforma, which I dealt with right in the beginning on page 45 in the middle, to say that protection of asylum seekers, they're sufficiently dealt with under the Refugees Act, and the BMA will be responsible for the initial processing of the entry of any person seeking to enter the Republic, which would include asylum seekers. But then section 23 of the Immigration Act, where you'll get an asylum transit visa, once you've got the asylum transit, it will allow you to go to the refugee reception office to make your claim for asylum. So there are processes in place to deal with these issues that have been raised here. Chair, if we go to page 46, BUSA has also raised certain issues, but we've dealt the costs associated with establishment, we've dealt with that already. The findings and the recommendations of the SAIS commissioned by the Department of Home Affairs, they say have seemingly been ignored without adequate justification. In this regard, we wish to indicate that Cabinet considered the full SAIS report in this regard, and they reiterated its full support for the establishment of the BMA as it was outlined in as it's outlined in the bill. The business also noted the primary thrust of the legislation is to combat the illicit movement of people and goods across the borders. So the issue here is once again between goods and people. We've already addressed that specific issue. Chair, on page 47, that first bullet, it indicates that the risk of negative impact on legitimate trade, we've dealt with that because of the carve-out clause that and the agreement between the Minister of Home Affairs and the Minister of Finance, SARS won't be subject to this specific piece of legislation once it comes into operation. Business also indicated that further that related to trade facilitation, such as the customs and citizenry inspections, it's once again it's the same issue. Chair, we can go to page 48. Maybe there's one thing here. I just want to indicate this whole approach. Sorry, Chair, on page 47. The issue that we're raising that it's insufficient, it's not been working over the last 20 years, etc. Just to prove a point in this regard, is the relevant national border control officials envisioned to be transferred to the BMA. So there will be, they talk about the vertical and horizontal integration, etc. So border coordination has been tried in various forms since 1994. In government, and all of them have failed to yield optimal results. And the latest example that we have, and this is why I want to come back to this, is the multi-party agreement on enhanced border coordination. And this was entered into between 22 organs of state, but only 17 organs of state have signed that specific agreement. And the implementation and enhanced coordination has yet been very uneven. So it's still unsatisfying, even having such an agreement in place. Because, you know, it's not that you're forcing people to, it's an agreement, and if you don't comply with the agreement, what do you do about that? Separation between policy formulation and enforcement, they're saying is considered problematic, but the model of separating policy making and the implementation in government, that's an established one. And an example in this regard, many departments have policy authority over separate implementing agencies and entities, and that best practices speaks to the appropriate oversight, governance and reporting arrangements made in place, and the bill provides for these relevant governance and oversight mechanisms as I've indicated earlier. The advice that they received, that we received from the DHS Chief State Law Advisor, that Home Affairs received from the Chief State Law Advisor, explained that the only way of transfer of the functions would be in terms of the Section 97 proclamation, which they agree with. But they accept that this is the lawful process, as they indicate, but but however, such proclamations are not subject to public consultation. So it's an issue of we need to consult with them publicly on this, in this regard, etc. What we're saying is that the border law enforcement is closely linked to national security, and the bill provides for the BMA to be accountable to Parliament through the Minister of Finance. So there are accountability measures. But the drafters of the Constitution basically said that this is an exclusive presidential prerogative or discretion, and Section 97 is one such of those discretions that are there. Chair, the next thing there is also NEDLAC. It was all of the issues that were dealt with in NEDLAC. We've already raised that. Mm-hmm. On page 50, Chair, the bullets 1 and 2 there, those are also the issues. I'm not going to go into detail because this is the SARS issue that's going to be written out of the legislation, not written out of it, but not be made subject to this legislation. So on the conclusion, business then basically said that they've got serious misgivings about the establishment, obviously, of the authority, and that the reasons are primarily due to the inherent risks involved in possible disruption to legitimate trade and the demands on a very constrained national fiscus. To this end, we're saying that we require to continue to improve and adapt the way in which we do business, etc. It will develop the BMA will develop a comprehensive risk management strategy and a plan to address various risks associated with, obviously, the new entity. And we have the view that business does not fully appreciate the full spectrum of the risks and the challenges facing all the dimensions in the border environment and border management. And so that's the reason why we need to have this specific piece of legislation. Institute for Security Studies, they just mentioned certain issues, the regional harmonization of border management, they mentioned certain key issues there, and we indicated the issues that they've raised there are policy issues. And remember, the BMA bill, it will not be a policy maker, it will be an implementing authority or entity. So however the SADC guidelines were considered, because they refer to the SAD guidelines, they were considered, but unfortunately they do not deal with what the BMA is intended to be, a single command and with an integrated approach. The other issue raised was the infrastructure, the equipment, the chair there on page 52. Obviously we indicate that we will use our existing structure, so obviously the people that will be coming over to the BMA will come with their funds, etc. So yeah, there shouldn't be a problem in that regard. Chair, that concludes the presentation. Sorry for the time it took, but we wanted a bit of detail.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. It was necessary. Adia DG is out because I thought he was going to deal with this amendment that you mentioned. At least introduce it to the committee, which we will then take forward as we deal with our close-to-close issues. But I'm going to open it up to members in the meantime. I hope the DG will join us. If there are any questions that you want to pose to this presentation, I'll start with Honourable Zidovu and come down this way.
Now, before I make a comment, Chair, I just want to understand where is the process now of this bill. It is with the NCOP. It has gone through what you call the NA. It is with the NCOP. Okay. I'll come back.
Honourable Zandamela, any questions, clarity, follow-ups?
No, thanks, Chair. Just a clarity, but I think they've clarified it. That was the issue of customs, the removal of, I think, some findings that there. Now, the next question will be, we've seen when we were in on the oversight, there's a number of people that were in the presentation that we were given a certain number that the people got inside the country but never went back. So with regard to border management, how the presentation doesn't speak to that. You know, if maybe you can explain what's going to happen to those people who are already inside the country that never went back wherever they're coming from. And then also the issue of corruption in the borders. Well, I know it might be perhaps the issue of operations and all those kind of things. Are you going to be having some sort of rotation with regard to officials we know for a fact that, you know, if the officials, when they are more than 5 years in the place, then this is where when they got used to the place, then this is where corruption starts. Thank you.
I just wanted to firstly establish that before I make some comments. For me, Chair, this is an important bill. One of the most important bills which is dealing with a big problem in South Africa, especially of illegal immigrants, who I don't know how many are there, 6 million or so, with all the profound negative implications associated with that. And for me, this is quite important, and it heralds a new epoch. Like it reminds me of what happened from 94 and 97 when SARS was set up. It came about as a result of integrating different components of tax collection and expenditure in the country. And at the end of the day, it worked. SARS is one of the best institutions in South Africa, having put together all these pieces, all these components. And for me, I see this process in that way. And I really want to say to Home Affairs, please, after we pass this, don't jeopardize it. Let it be our shining example. Let it be something that yield good results for the people of this country. Let it be something that we all want, because it really addresses a fundamental problem in the country. And I know of similar institutions that are set up with a good intention, but in the course of events, things collapse and become something that you cannot explain. For me, this is very much important, and I want to sincerely implore on Home Affairs to just bear that in mind, that this important process must not be jeopardized. It must not be one of the sad stories that we have. Please, I want to request you to do that. The second point, Honorable Chair, is that I see a lot of comments here, and I really want to see a situation whereby we ensure that in all respects the process is guarded, more especially from a constitutional point of view. This process has gone a long way. I don't want to see a situation where it is defective to an extent that any person takes it up to the Concord, challenge its constitutionality, and therefore succeed and it derail us. I really want us to ensure that we have all the necessary safeguards, so that it becomes something that passed the test and it gets implemented. I'm just envisioning it, and sorry, Chair, I'm excited about it. It's for the first time, personally, that I'm interacting with this process. A lot of, you know, members here have dealt with this, but it's for the first time I listen carefully about what is happening. And I'm just envisioning a situation where we integrate Home Affairs, SADF, the police, everybody, I'm sure including the public works, the work that public works is doing to build the borders. I don't know whatever it is, the fence, I think they are messing it up. And I think that component also as well must come to this part and become one entity that, you know, consolidates everything into one. For me, if that can work, it will go a long way in terms of addressing the pertinent problem that we are having. Now, just listening for the first time, the comments that people are making, Buza is saying all of this about the goods movement as well as the people movements. All that I'm saying is that they want to preserve their interests, their financial interests, more than any other thing else. But the problem in South Africa is illicit trading and goods that are coming to South Africa, and we need to ensure that we find a way of blocking that. I can see the unions are saying, no, you are outsourcing, but in my view, this is not outsourcing, because all the authority will be governed by the Constitution, by the PMFMA, by the public service, whatever it is, it will be governed by public service, like all other state-owned entities, and for me, it's not outsourcing. Is pulling up together all the necessary components. The last point, please, when this body is in place, recruit the best of the best. Please, recruit the best of the best, the shining examples. And you know, starts with all these recent problems. I grew up respecting it as an institution, and SARS was serious, just in terms of recruiting the caliber of people. It was putting merit above everything else, and I wish this institution is doing that. The only question that I'm not clear of, Chair, is, yes, I understand that your job is to maintain and regulate the borders, but what about those who are inside? Already we have six million, as I said. What about the illegal ones? Who's going to take care of that? And for me, the present situation is quite problematic. I was talking to one official in the department last week who was saying to me, they only have about 700 people, immigration officials throughout the country, who are handling people who are illegal. I said, no, you can't do that. As in a country as big as ours, we need more than 10,000 maybe immigration officials. And if you need support to push this, let us do it. But my question is, where do you locate them? Where are these people? Where do we locate them? Because we need to find a way, as much as you close the border, you control them, not close the border, you control the border and regulate them properly. There are 6 million people who are in, and most of them are illegal. They need to be policed, if I may put it that way, in one way or the other. And we need to find a mechanism where we are going to clean up all those who are already inside the country. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. You know, I thought Honorable Dodobo will share the terrible and the depressing situation that we saw in Beitbridge.
Yeah.
Watching people crossing over from Zimbabwe without anything, they were crossing over the river there, we were sitting and watching them. The fence dilapidated there. You can see that entry is easier even without any documentation. Now, the focus seems to be more on formalizing the already formal structure kind of border management, and it's not going beyond that to ensure. So, which means that cooperation between the different departments that are working there, they will still be needed even with the border management authority, because I don't think it would be realistic to have everyone, including the responsibilities of public works, you put them into the border management agents. We will be overloading them, and they won't be necessarily having a focus on the real issues. So I think that particular matter also has to come out in terms of how that gets, because I can assure you with the situation that we have now in our borders, even if you have the water management agency, you recruit the best people ever. The problem to me is not much of the people who come, because if you look at the numbers of the people who come and the numbers of the people who go out, but still we have a massive number of illegal immigrants here. For example, that municipality Musina, they were complaining that one of their problems
one of their major problems is illegal immigrants. They are putting a strain on their infrastructure there. And so I think that's one of the things that would need to be taken care of. But I would particularly be interested. You see, I don't want us to brush off this thing of workers. Unfortunately, in my other life before this life, I was a trade unionist, and when SASA was formed, for example, there were massive problems, employee problems. For about 4 years, there was instability in SASA. Strike after strike, because people's conditions of employment were just changed. They were just changed, you know. So are the lessons learned from that particular situation, and are there measures in place to ensure that there is a smooth transition? Because we also don't want to sit with a situation where those people who are already working for these government departments who are at the border decide that, I don't want to move into that agency. I'd rather remain in the department. Then we will leave the department overburdened with staff that they can't necessarily utilize because people will just refuse. So that's why I'm saying, if we just brush off those things and we say, no, those things were resolved at NetLeg, but we don't necessarily know what those things are. We're facing a risk of creating a crisis for ourselves than rendering a solution. So I think those are the two things that I think really they need to be addressed, particularly the issue of the workers. We need information in relation to that, so that we can know that at the level of operations and administratively we are safe. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, all members. I think from my side on the issue of personnel, I am covered by the previous comments. But I think what will also be important is to give us an indication in terms of what are the budgetary implications to implement this bill. Okay. Sorry, Honourable Fayel, I forgot.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, while we are trying to secure our borders, which is very important, but there are some countries that we share borders with, like Swaziland, Lesotho, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Namibia, and Botswana. We share borders with those countries. Don't you think it might be also carry a weight to do some awareness to those countries as far as this bill is concerned, so that they must also help us telling their people that, look here, in South Africa, of course, they have something like this. So that, because there's something that we can't now deny, that no matter what South Africa can do, if the nearby countries are not buying in, we'll have a problem, serious problem. We need to get their buy-in and check if we can, that can solve some of the problems that we might face without their buy-in. Thank you.
Thank you, Fayel. I think, DG, in addition to responding to the issues, perhaps also respond or table, I don't know which way you put it, but just in terms of the agreement with SARS and the possible amendment to the bill, if you could maybe just take us through that as well.
Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. Maybe let me deal with the Honourable Zandamele, I think, raised the issue around the that the bill doesn't talk about people who are in the country already. So, Chair, I think one of the challenges that we have is that we invest so much money in arrest and deportations for people who end up coming back into the country through porous borders. So our first step is that let's first secure the border, ensure that it's foolproof. You know, that's what we are trying to do. Say the BMA will take the responsibility not only of managing the port of entry, but dealing with also the borderline. Because what you saw in Bight Bridge, you know, is precisely the thorny issues that we have been grappling with. That you want to fix issues of illegal migration, but the people who are responsible for infrastructure management, they don't sit with you. They don't understand what you're dealing with. So it is outside there you end up saying, public works, there's a problem here, and so forth. Then that is why we are saying that that responsibility must reside with the Border Management Authority, because they will be dealing with that particular issue. Once you know that you have secured the border line and that the process in the port of entry are robust enough, you then know that you have confidence in the deportation processes, because you deport now for good. When you say you've declared the prisoner undesirable, there's no mechanism of them coming back, because you know that you've sealed your borders. I think that's a very important step that we need to undertake. That is why, obviously, in the bill itself, we're not going to talk about some of the operational matters, because for us, we regard that the arrest for deportation as an operational matter that we'll have to execute. Obviously, it is correct that the inspectorate is actually diminishing. It was 731 last year. Out of natural attrition and resignation, we're sitting with 685 of the inspectors now, who are looking at identifying employers who are employing people illegally, who are identifying people who are crossing, you know, the border illegally, and then arrest them for deportation. That number is shrinking. I mean, in the last 5 years, we've been talking about a similar issue, to say that we need to build capacity in that particular area, because they're not only looking for people that are arrested for deportation, that are illegal in the country. They also do other work. We know we process people who are applying for permanent residence in the Republic. Some of them, the majority of the applications, which over, I would say confidently, over 85% of the applications for permanent residence is on the basis of a foreign national being married to a South African. So these inspectors also, some of their responsibility is to go and investigate the existence of good faith spousal relationship between the parties or the party that is applying for permanent residence in the country. Because there are people who get into marriages of convenience and they get rewarded on a monthly basis or on a once-off basis to marry a foreign national so that they can get documents in the country. So that's part of the responsibility that the 700 officials that you're talking about, which are now reduced to 685, they are doing. So we do need an expanded. We even used to make an example to the portfolio committee that in the UK we're told that in London alone as a city, there's about 3,000 of such officials who are doing that. But we have the fiscal constraint in South Africa is creating huge problems for us. So I think we have really exhausted our discussion around the incapacity that we have in the department. So we're really soldiering on with what we have. Then on the issues of corruption and around the rotation of staff, it's a model that we want to adopt, even with the current situation, where we should, but also we are hampered with a number of things. Where someone says, you're wanting to move me, you know, from this particular port of entry, but my house is not there. You know, you're moving me from Lebombo to Bight Bridge, you know, and so forth. My family lives. So there's also other issues that are labor-related. But it is true that if you're not rotating people, you're creating problems, because you can use it as a risk mitigation. People become familiar with the theft, and that they run all sorts of operations with syndicates. That's the reality that we are faced with. At some point, I had always said, particularly in Ledport, I said I wish we could even remove staff on it every night when they knock off. Because if you can take them by helicopter, take them somewhere else. Because part of the problem is that they end up themselves being contaminated, that they can no longer deal with the issues of the government effectively. Because the familiarity, I mean, you have a situation where across the border, there is settlement. In Bight Bridge is the same thing. In Lebombo is the same thing. In Oshuk is the same thing. there's human settlements in Western Pittsburgh, just a few meters across the border. So there is no sterile area where you know that this is actually a port of entry, that there must be no business activities that are taking place there, and that the people that are working there are not familiar with the locals. But it becomes a normal thing that creates security risk for the country. So it's something that we need to look into around the rotation. But BMA obviously will put those mechanisms in place. Now, the Honourable Dodo, you're quite correct. The bill is quite an important one. We obviously want to ensure that we follow all the processes, you know, to ensure that this becomes a shining example of an authority that will be able to help us to deal with the issues of state security, but also to facilitate goods. Because ours is to ensure that those that are commercial ports, those that are ports where people come for tourism purposes, you know, they get the kind of service that they need. So on the issue relating to DPW, you know, and the coordination, we envisage, as I said earlier, that those responsibilities should not lie with public works. You know, because as we speak, they are unable to fulfill some of the mandates, not only just the borderline, but in many other aspects, they are actually overloaded. So we do believe that the BMA needs to set up structures that will be responsible for physical infrastructure. We're talking here about the actual port of entry, but we're also talking about actual borderline, even some of the other ways of monitoring the borderline through using technology. So that's what we envisage. We've learned a lot from our Canadian counterparts who are using the similar model in Canada to monitor their borderline. The issue of the workers, I think we take the point that, you know, conditions of service, and we keep on saying that we will not have a situation where people become worse off than where they were before in their previous employment or where they were stationed. If someone is coming from SARS, or Defence Force or Home Affairs, because some of the people that we currently have at Port Control, the whole division of Port Control will move from Home Affairs to the BMA. The only division that will be left will be the Inspectorate, which will be doing law enforcement internally. That will be the division that remains with the Department of Home Affairs. But the issue relating to borderline, obviously, it will be the responsibility of the BMA. There's work that we're doing with our neighbors. I know, for example, tomorrow, South Africa is going to Swaziland. We have been meeting with Namibia, Zimbabwe, all those conversations, Lesotho. We are talking to our neighbors in relation to what we are doing as part of one, improving the border infrastructure. Because in some of the areas, we are proposing the creation of one-stop border posts so that people do not spend a lot of time in the ports of entry, so that we have shared facilities with our neighboring countries. So there's protocols that need to be agreed to. There's an investment that we need to do, you know, all of us in terms of the port infrastructure. So there's a whole lot of other. And so also we are raising this issue around the creation of the Border Management Authority. Honorable Chair, on the issues relating to the agreement with SARS, particularly the specific clauses, there is obvious proposed text that is going to be in the legislation that specifically talks to that, how we're going to articulate it. And I'm not sure, maybe you wish to, that we go specifically to how we're going to, how the text is all called crafted, and we can do that.
Perhaps you can just provide us with a document. I know you've written a letter, but I'm just suggesting that you provide us with that document.
Okay. No, I will ask my colleagues to do that. But basically in that, all what we are saying is that we're having an agreement, as DM has said, that the responsibility on customs will remain with SARS. So it's an exclusion text that specifically addressed that particular issue. So we will provide that. It's readily available. We already did it a few weeks ago. Thank you very much. I hope I've covered all the areas, but if not, colleagues can add. Thanks, Chair.
Maybe just one thing to add on the issue about the workers, and because it's a serious issue and a sensitive issue for that matter. If one has regard, I just want to refer the committee members to clause 37 in the bill. Specifically deals with transfer employees from organ or state, which obviously indicates that people must not be worse off than where they were
at that point in time. Even it goes as far as their pension funds and stuff like that, how, and retirement benefits, etc. All of that is dealt with here. And obviously there's also then the coordinating bargaining that needs to take place in this specific process. So it's not just a slap bang thing that we're just going to do it and say people must go. There's a whole process that was carefully thought out to say these are the different points that you need to reach and these hurdles you need to overcome before somebody is transferred to. And you're going to have instances where people say, I don't want to go, etc. And then you need to deal with those issues in terms of the relevant labour legislation. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to raise two things, but I'm covered by my colleague when we referred to Clause 37, because that we really did want to colleagues to learn lessons around the labour issue. So that clause on transitional provision is very important, because we're building specific measures to protect all workers and all staff that will be transferred. So I'm covered by that. The only other comment I wanted to make, Chair, is again when the one honourable member was talking about the fact that we need to guard this process from a constitutional point of view. So I just wanted to indicate that we received at least one, if not two, independent legal opinions on the constitutionality. I'm saying independent. And in addition to that, the state law advisor, we've been working very closely with them. They have also given us the assurance that from their perspective it is constitutionally compliant. And lastly, from a constitutional point of view, I've just checked both the SAP's inputs and our interactions with SANDF. They were initially concerned that there were constitutional issues, but the latest interactions, they've also not raised any constitutional concerns. So we've been very careful about that. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you. DJ, I think you didn't cover the issue of budgets.
No, thanks, Chair. So firstly, let me repeat what Advocate Erasmus said, and then I'll deal with the future. So 2-3 years ago, we did a costing of how much border law enforcement is costing us in this country right now as we're sitting here. That exercise was done in 2014-15, and we estimated that all the departments, Home Affairs, Health, Agriculture, SAPS, Customs, those are the main ones, we estimated that the current money we're spending as a state is around 3.8 billion rand. So that's roughly what we are currently spending across different departments. Then we did a second exercise to project into the future, and we asked the question, what is the budget we think we'll need in about 15 years from now to sustain the BLA with all the resources? And remember, Honorable Chairperson, we said we'll need about 21,000 staff for this BMA. Right now we have about 9,000, just under 9,000. So we are projecting that it should be just over double. In order to sustain that number of people, we projected we will need about 10.5 billion rand. Okay, so in other words, it's just over half, from the 3.8 to about 10.5. Now, the next point to make, Chairperson, is that most of the money that the BMA will get will come through the transfer from these departments that will be affected. So that is the one source of funding. So in other words, all these immigration officers in Home Affairs that are working ports of entry, those staff must come together with the budget. The same will apply to agriculture officials, the same will apply to border police officials, the same will apply to the Department of Health and Port Health. So most of the budget, we have seen it being transferred. So that is the view we have. But lastly, Chairperson, we also are of the view that we will need new money just to establish this entity. So we've been in discussions with National Treasury on this matter. And National Treasury asked us to prepare scenarios in terms of how much money we'll need. So we came up with three scenarios. One scenario is where we wanted a lot of money. I'm just speaking very simply. But one scenario is where we wanted the maximum amount. The other scenario where we were saying we need the least amount of money just to establish the BMA, and then we had the middle road scenario. So we gave them three scenarios. Based on that submission, in the current financial year that we're in, 2019, for the first time, Treasury has given us an allocation for the BMA. So as we're sitting here right now, we have an allocation of about 16 million rand, 1/6.
And initially that money was given on the assumption that Parliament would have already finalized the BMA bill. They've given us money also for, they've set aside money for next year and also the following year. So this money that they've set aside, I think for the next 3 years or for the current MTF period, I think it's about 84 million rand. Clearly that 84 million rand does not even meet the minimum scenario that we gave them. So it doesn't even meet our requirements for that minimum scenario. But Chairperson, we have said as a department that we will work with that money that we've been given, and clearly you know, we will start doing one or two of the very basic things that we need to do. So that is the summary in terms of where we are. But clearly we will need to, as we enter into every financial year, we will continue to give the projected cost that we will need. And then of course the headline is that what we have been given by Treasury, clearly it is not sufficient you know, to do the process according to the roadmap that we have. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG and your team, for your responses. I think our members, we are satisfied.
100% satisfied.
We
are 100% satisfied.
100%.
Honourable? Well, I just wanted to check. The DG mentioned that the human settlement might not be the product of. But was there any engagement with the municipality? I know the cost going to be too much. But any possibilities maybe of relocating those people who are along the borders so that it makes the deal the process? I just want to check in line with that.
Well, let me just indicate that we have, particularly in Lebombo, one of the issues we were fighting in Lebombo, where we're requesting the municipality, for example, to deal with, was the existence of the tax rate, because it brings all other unwanted problems. So that's the one issue. But on the other side, we have raised it with our counterparts in Mozambique, for example, but it's quite difficult because we have no control over it. In Oshuk, we have problems with some of the settlement, but the minister raised the matter with the local council, I think, and who indicated that actually that human settlement there, and our biggest concern was the mosque that was created there, you know, next to the border. And the response was given was that no, that land actually belongs to the chief. So the people were given that land by the chief, so the municipality had no control over that particular area. So it is a problem because some people want to stay there because of there's trading that happens and so forth. But I'm saying, you know, by international standards, a border must not be contaminated, must be sterile, so that we are very clear that we are crossing, you know, into other countries. In Swaziland, we also have the problem where people are living. So it's quite a difficult one to play around with. But there are certain communities who live in borderline where you have said the same claim. You know, on the other side is Swaziland, on the other side is South Africa. We have the same issue in Botswana, for example, where we ended up creating what we call a community crossing a point in a similar law. So it was becoming difficult that these people are relatives, but they are just separated by the border. The chief is one. So we had to then intervene by creating a community crossing border point. But that's what it is, because it's regulated. There's rules around how they are using it. Everybody's permissions have been taken and so forth. But we do wish that moving forward, we don't have a human settlement around the borderline, particularly in Port of Ends, because that's where the problem of contamination comes in. Thanks.
Thank you, Vichy. I think, and thank you for all of the responses. I think from our side, and what will assist the process as well, is that written agreement with that, if we can please get that copy, because it also determines where our engagement with SAP as well as other departments going forward. So if we can get that as a matter of agency, DG, so that we can then, as a committee, deliberate on our process moving forward. I think that being said, I think members have also reiterated is that we do an efficient life with our oversight in at the border post. I mean, we do feel the need of some kind of coordinated authority or approach in terms of managing the borders. And that the members as well as yourself.
But can they go with the wind? Can I give them a wind?
No.
A wind?
No.
Are you going to pray?
No, not that. I just want.